And in my personal belief system, all paths, if they are productive and not harming anyone and of benefit to the practitioner, are valid paths. In my own personal work, I've done a lot of work using Eastern philosophies, incorporating them into my own Western Hermetics. I do a lot of work with the Hermetic Kabbalah. I do a lot of work with astrology. So personally, I'm all over the map. And I've drawn from a lot of different resources. And particularly when I teach, I like to draw from a lot of different resources because you never really know where someone who's coming to your workshop might be actually coming from. So I try to make things relevant for everyone. Now, this particular topic that we're talking about, developing your magical persona, obviously for a 50-minute class is really kind of pushing it. So, as is my usual style, I don't usually take a breath because I get really passionate when I teach. If you have a question, please stop me. Feel free to stop me, ask me, you know, whatever it is. Feel free to disagree. My way is not the highway, no matter what teacher you study with. They are going to take all of the information that is given to you and they are going to filter it through their own body of experience, which does not necessarily mean that it is 100% correct, regardless of how high esteem you hold that particular individual to be in. So that's my disclaimer to you, is take what I say to you today and process it through your own filters, particularly for this subject. This is a very personal subject. It is not something that is going to look the same for everyone. It's going to morph and it's going to change as you grow, as you become more adept in whatever skill set it is that you have chosen, whatever path you have chosen. Now, because we don't have a whole lot of time for a class that normally as a workshop would probably have been a 3-day series, what I did was I actually gave you a lot of text from things I have written on here, so that you can then go back and kind of fill in the blanks where we maybe didn't get so much of a chance to talk about the specifics of it. So essentially, first thing we need to think about is, what is your magical persona? Well, actually, it's a composite of a variety of different things. It is most definitely an alignment and an ability to synthesize those parts of self. Now, parts of self, they can have many means depending on what your tradition is, even within the pagan community, and even more names depending on whether you follow a Buddhist path, whether you follow a Hindu path, blah, 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 blah. The Kabbalah is another, or the Judaic path is another format as well. We're going to be talking a little bit about those parts of selves, and I'm going to put it in very concrete terms for you. The magical persona is a synthesis of those parts of self, aligned and working as vehicles that have absorbed the information, the lessons, the knowledge base that you have, and the experiences that you have had gathered through this lifetime as well as other lifetimes. And that's a piece that sometimes we overlook. Bless you. When we're talking about the magical persona, we're not just talking about this particular lifetime. We are talking about the cumulative experience that we bring forward into this lifetime as practitioners on a spiritual or a magical path, whatever your path may be. So the magical persona is a conglomeration of many, many things. It's your innate abilities. It's the practices that you have established. Do you meditate? Do you regularly use spell work? Do you regularly cast your circles? Do you regularly offer up devotion to deity? Do you regularly so on and so forth? Fill in the blanks for whatever it is you consider to be your spiritual practice. That serves as a foundation to feed and to inform those parts of self which become the vehicles, so that when you step into ritual space or you begin a magical working, When we talk about the magical persona, we are talking about that aspect of yourself, which is you, but it is more than what you are. It is more than just the sum total of what your physical abilities, gifts, energy, actions are. Your magical persona is, you could think of it as the costume that you wear. And I hesitate to use that word because it sounds like you're trivializing it. do not misinterpret that for the times when you are invoking deity and you are wearing the mantle of that deity through whatever techniques you use to have that deity come into circle or magical work or inform you. So the magical persona is a combination of a lot of things. I have one here because I'm someone who likes to read a lot, and I read the dictionary when I was a kid. Geeky nerd, sorry. Geeky dancer nerd makes it even worse, but anyway.
My kind of person.
I always usually try to put some sort of definition on here, and so this is what I picked. Persona, definition of the way you behave, talk, etc. with other people that causes them to see you as a particular kind of person. So let's just think about that for a minute. So if we take this and move it beyond just your physical aspect of talking and interacting with corporeal people, do we not, when we are in sacred space, interact, commune, communicate with, if anyone else didn't get one, communicate with, thank you, the divine as well? Yes, we do. So this is the way that you act as the interface, or the interface that you have when you are communing with spirit in all of its forms. Also, this is something else that we lose sight of. When we are working together as a group, we are, in effect, interacting with one another. Now, y'all know that. That's a no-brainer. But you know what? Your magical personas are also interacting with one another, too. And this is something that I always kind of point as a point of reference. You know, as far as coven work goes, and, you know, I'm high priestess of one coven, getting ready to, and in process of forming another, what I'm looking for in membership is not necessarily going to be the person that I really, really love the most. Because the fact of the matter is, I can not really, really get along with you all that well in physical realms, as long as magically we can work together, as long as magically we have respect for each other. And this is drawing on the magical persona here now. The magical personas will play nice, whereas perhaps the individuals, you don't have to be BFFs just because you're coven mates. They're going to be friction. It's like a family. Siblings fight. But when it really comes down to it, siblings have your back. That's the magical persona. So that when you are in that sacred space, and I'm using sacred space in a very broad term, does not have to be ritual. It can be you sitting at your computer, taking a moment to close your eyes, connect with the divine, ground with everything, maybe subtly diffusing the energy that's been riled up in your workspace, and you're subtly working to kind of keep yourself away from that energy that is not productive. Any sacred space. So the second definition here is the image or personality that a person presents to other people. Again, twofold, spiritual and physical. As you begin working more with your magical persona, when you begin to interact in mundane settings, there's a certain quality that your energy has. It changes. This I give as the analogy, you know, you're sitting somewhere waiting for a bus, you're looking down, reading a newspaper, and someone walks past you, you don't know that person from Adam, and immediately you're drawn. You look up, you have to look up, because the energy of that person is just so dynamic. Either way, either they're in a really bad funk, or they just seem to be walking with this glow, whether you can see auras or not, you can feel it. It's palpable. It's tangible. So the way in which people perceive us, oftentimes you will hear, particularly when you are in ritual space, you know, if the ritual has gone particularly well, and let's say, for instance, you have a role in the space, in the ritual, which you don't have to have, by the way, but let's just put that out there. And then afterwards, someone will say to you, wow, you look so much bigger in that space, mm-hmm. or you look different, like what, and it's not because you were calling in deity into you, you were just cast in a circle and calling in the quarters. But somehow you change. The image of what you were walking into that space, the image of what the person and people know of you outside of that space has now changed because you have now changed. When you do meditation work to work a little bit more with your magical persona, sometimes you will be amazed at how you yourself in your inner sight envision yourself in the form of your magical persona. That will change as well. When I first began doing some of this work and I was trying to get in touch with, you know, that magical self within me, that magical persona within me, I always had this image of this traditionally Celtic, you know, red flaming hair and very tall, very slender, very lithe, you know, pale white, beautiful woman. And that was my magical persona at that point in time. Now when I get in touch with it, it's more a body of light. It's not an image at all. It's light, it's energy, it morphs, it changes, it's a geometric pattern. It's very much different. But the other piece to this as well is that there will remain always a core of what that image is, because that image is being projected by your own subconscious, by your own personality. The core will always be there. What cloaks it will change in accord with what you need at that particular time in that particular space. Which, going back to that point that I gave you of the example, you might do one ritual and people, you'll get feedback one way, and then you'll do some other ritual and somebody will come up to you and say, you look completely different. You don't jive, you know? So what's that mean? You're a shapeshifter? Well, isn't that what this work is? Actually, we are shifting our shape. We are trying to come and become more in touch with what is truly us, not just this flesh and bone, not just what we see as this visage and present to the world, but we are trying to evolve ourselves to a point where we are living 24/7, 365 days a year in the glory of who we truly are. And that's part and parcel of who this magical persona is. So I mentioned to you that it acts as an interface. What I have on here is, because you will sometimes also hear it referenced as the magical self. And I like that word. In fact, I have several acronyms for that self, but we're going to look at two here. I have here as soul enlivened life force. This is the self, and I have all capitals here because I am referring to that higher nature within us, the one that is more connected more deeply to spirit, that is in alignment with the higher working. We can also look at the word self and say sacred, energetic, localized focus. I see this as the small letter self. This is our everyday experience. This is a sum total, and I have here localized focus of energy, meaning what our energetic signature is as corporeal beings. Every step we take on this ground, our sitting here today, we are energizing, we are leaving an imprint. If we were to get up and could see it, we'd see little blobs of imprints of, you know, the shapes of our form sitting here, our legs extended out. Every step that we take, whether we've got on the thickest socks and the, you know, the highest heeled boots, is leaving some sort of an imprint, because we are 100% pure energy. So when I think about using that magical self slash persona, I'm thinking about that point within us where we are consciously aware of ourselves as energetic beings in mundane settings. I'm going to say that again. Where we are consciously aware of ourselves as energetic beings in mundane settings. You know the adage that with more knowledge comes bigger responsibility, greater responsibility as we move along the path? Well, guess what? That's kind of what the inference is. Because first and foremost, we are corporeal beings manifest in this lifetime, in this experience, having this experience. That is our number one commitment, is to being the best that we can as physical human beings. The next directive is in being able to remove that veil, which relates to the magical persona. Trust me, I am getting there. We're taking a little circuitous route, but we're getting there. Being able to lift that veil and being able to acknowledge, accept, and have complete awareness of our spiritual capabilities being physical, corporeal essences. Quite frankly, you know, and this is a little bit of an aside, but you know, all the beings up there that are non-corporeal envy us because we actually have the ability to remember our divine nature, to remember the magic within us, and then actually be able to use it concretely to reach out to someone, to transfer that energy in a loving pat on the shoulder to make them feel better, in the words that we say to someone that puts them at ease, in the actions that we take that right a wrong and act on behalf of someone else who has lost their voice. All of these things we actually are engaging our magical persona in. It doesn't just have to be in the space of a ritual. Yes, ma'am.
Can you just talk a little bit more about that when you said lifting the veil?
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean?
By lifting the veil?
Like out in the mundane world, are you talking about lifting mm-hmm. the veil
mm-hmm.
To allow others mm-hmm. to see just a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the point you were making?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that is largely brought about by the actions that we take, the responses and the reactions that we have to things.
Why would we do that?
Why would we do that? Because there are some points in time when by me stepping into my higher self, I will have greater effect on what the physical outcome will be.
So do you see the magical persona as your magical self, as your higher self?
Yes, to some degree, but it's not just that. It's not only the higher self. To say that would be limiting it. It is the sum total of the higher self, the lower self, the middle selves, everything that is incorporated within us that makes us fully human, that makes us partially human, that makes us spirit and makes us the divine. It is all of that working together. Now, the scales or the quantity of portion at any given time is going to change, in that there will be some scenarios where you are calling more upon your higher self than you are on the middle or the lower selves. There will be other scenarios where survival instinct, fight, not flight, is what you need, and that will be the larger persona or the larger percentage. But that does not mean that all of those things cannot be done with the highest intent for all. All of this is black, it's not black and white, it's all gray. Everything has a good and everything has a bad. And what we think they mean, because we've been conditioned in a specific way to parcel out what's good and what's bad, what's light, what's dark, all of it applies to all of it. That's the paradigm, that's the paradox that we have. Even within the higher self, there is the shadow and the dark self. within the lower self, or what we would consider to be brute force and instinct and survival, there is that spark of light, because if we did not have that instinct and survival, there would be no creation. We would have ceased to exist as a species. Does that answer?
Yes.
Thank
definitely.
You. Okay, thank good. You. So the form that it takes, the form that this magical persona takes is largely dictated by the experience that you have had. Not only the experience that you have had, but what you have done and how you have integrated that experience into your being. Now, not to make you hyper-vigilant, but as you're moving along your day, we're not even talking about spiritual activities, but as you're moving along your day, how much time do you really take to stop and think before you give an answer to something that you're being questioned about? How much time do you really take to stop and think about what the consequence of this action that you're taking is going to have? Now remember, I'm not talking about good or bad here. I'm just talking generalities. How much time do you take in a given day to actually just pause and just simply be? That literally is a question. Jump right in.
None.
Not enough.
Not enough.
Definitely not enough. When it comes to my kids, maybe a bit more than with myself, but that's not even enough.
Perhaps the question
is more difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, for me, like, I always kind of, I mean, just on like a sheer practical level, like, just being spiritual in general, it's hard to keep a spiritual practice going, you know, with work and school mm-hmm. and the mundane life, and mm-hmm. so it's hard to kind of remember.
But you can keep your magical persona.
Right.
I do try every morning, though. Sometimes it doesn't happen, but mm-hmm. I do try.
Mm-hmm. Coffee helps.
And people
pick up on
that. I have
to do it before coffee, or it doesn't happen.
They do. They do.
I do a fair bit of pausing. In fact, my problem is actually getting stuff out
right.
fast enough.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. So it can serve as a delay, or it can also serve as a moment of respite in your day. That was not to necessarily make a judgment on what a spiritual practice is or what it should look like. It was just simply to make you a little bit more aware, so that perhaps as you go through, especially today, although I will tell you, it will be easier today because we are surrounded by spiritual things. It is much more difficult to carry this into the world. As a side note for the whole spiritual practice thing, all right, let me give you a firsthand example, all right? I write a lot. I have probably 9 blogs now. I have a variety of different courses that I put online. I teach constantly. I work full-time. I have 5 children. I have a husband who is not involved in this at all. And for a while there, I was able to sit and meditate every single night before I went to bed, like an hour is what I did with some sort of work. And then things got really busy because my mother got sick and had to go into a nursing home, and I'm an only child, and blah, blah, blah. And I was not doing anything. Well, I wasn't doing anything with my spiritual practice. And I was starting to feel really inadequate and feeling like guilty and berating myself. And then I realized that every time I sit at the computer, which is every single day, and write a post, or even send an email to someone who inquires about the coven or wants to know more about the path, you know what? That is actually spiritual practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so don't discount the little things. Even if you have in your mindset the intention of sitting and meditate, that counts. Even if you didn't get to it, it counts, because it means that now you have shifted into a space where you are thinking about not only the physical needs that you have and the obligations that other people have put upon you, but you are taking the time to acknowledge that you are a spiritual being. You are taking the time to acknowledge that this is something that is important to you, and whether or not you can follow through with the action does not matter at all. That's the icing on the cake, all right? Yeah, jump right in.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it would help.
Sure.
The way I work my practice, and I'm not perfect, I am human, unfortunately, and so I'm by no means do I do this every day, every step, but I try to make every action, every word, every thought spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
I work a little bit with the Hindu gods, so I sacrifice mm-hmm. for them. I love steak. Mm-hmm. And now I'm up to 2 days a week where I will not eat beef.
Nice.
Because of the Hindu practice, but
okay.
I'm vegan.
Mm-hmm.
I try to make every time I eat, every time I take that energy in it, even if it's a plant or I think about that plant.
Nice.
And I every time I'm speaking to my husband, and I have depression and anxiety, we fight a lot. So I spend a lot of time not doing what I want to do, but mm-hmm. I read a book. I
right.
say I work at the dollar store in customer service, so
mm-hmm.
Every action, I'm trying to connect with that energy and that spirit
mm-hmm.
of everything around me and my religion.
Very nice, very nice.
When I'm doing something specifically pagan oriented.
Right, very nice. And that kind of ties in with something that I've told some of my students before, in that, you know, I wrote something a while ago called Just Touch the Door Handle. And the reason I wrote it is what I was thinking at the time was, well, there are chakras all over, but there are specifically chakras in your hands, all right, energy points. And so I started thinking to myself, you know, I open a lot of doors, wah-wah, you know, my car door, doors at office.
Doors.
Yeah, regular doors, physical doors, okay? And I thought to myself, and this was just my own little experiment, how cool would it be if every time I reached to touch a door, I infused that with an intention of a positive day for whoever was coming after me.
Kind of like the magical way of pay it forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, this is physically, concretely something I can do that I can incorporate into an everyday thing that I do, because I have to open doors. Now, obviously, I don't have test subjects, so I don't know if it worked. But it worked for me in helping me establish the mindset of drawing up this magical person, this magical persona, and putting it into a space that is purely mundane, leaving a little essence. Remember I said to you about the imprint, leaving a little essence of myself, my highest self, behind or forward for the next individual to in some way access. So those are some of the things that you can think about. I want to talk about the parts of self, because that's really important. So let's just move on to, and I'm really sorry to kind of be rushing through this. I'm trying to touch on the salient points with y'all. So we talked a little bit about this being an incorporation of the parts of self. I have here, keeping it very simple, lower, middle, higher, and then of course the spiritual self, and what their functions are. Now, let me throw this out before we do anything. When I say lower, higher, that is not a designation of worth, all right? It just simply means where it resides in a more manifest, denser form of energy. When we talk about the lower self, this is concretely our physical self. This is the foundation. Key words for that would be I have. This is the place of acquisition. This is the first place that we experience actually the physical world, in how we are nurtured, how we are cared for when we are born into these physical bodies. That first touch of our mother, the touches that we receive thereafter, going forward, our needs, are they met? Have they been met? All of those things. This is our area also, if we want to dig a little bit deeper, of what keeps us in a mode of survival. Now, if we jump up to the higher self, what do we need? And I'm just throwing this question out there for you to think about. What do we need for our spiritual self to survive? What are the instincts? See, that's why I'm saying, just because it's higher self doesn't mean that these lower things do not apply to it. They do. They're just a little more refined in their energy, in what they're directing towards. All of these move constantly this way and this way. It's not just one straight line you're going up. Yes?
You need to spend time with the middle self
mm-hmm.
Before the ego can connect with the higher consciousness.
Absolutely. And going to that middle self, I see it as aspiration. I see it as I want to become. We've moved from our lower needs. We've moved from that space of needing to have, needing to acquire. And now we've moved it into that place of the middle self. The middle self is where, for the most part, we most often reside. It is that space of being where we have learned to kind of reconcile what is appropriate in terms of our needs and our instincts, and where we can kind of push the boundaries a little bit. The middle self also actually is the interface. It is where we reside, but it is the interface that serves as that kind of synthesized hub, if you will, between what my needs are, what my instinctual nature is, where my ego is. Now, in the middle self, the ego and the personality are much more formed. Lower self, ego can take over, small e. And I do not believe that ego is bad. I will throw that right out there at you. All right, and you'll find out why in a minute. Middle self is the place where we now have drawn up that ego, because we have to have that small ego, otherwise we would just wither and die and shrink in a corner and no one would know that we were there. We have to sometimes just kick up our heels and scream and say, I'm here, this is what I want, and I will accept nothing less than this. Middle self incorporates the personality. By the time we get to the middle self, we now have ego tempered by how we interact with everyone else in the world. We now have the place of navigating and learning how to understand where our place is in the world, where we can push the envelope, and perhaps where maybe it is best if we do not. When we move to the higher or the mental self, and this is your mental self. Middle is the emotional self, driven by how I feel. We now can reach towards a place of gnosis. It's not just knowledge, it's not just wisdom. It's a place where, in our higher mental self, we actually have incorporated all of the lessons that we have learned. It is a place where the small ego drops away. In its place, the big E. And why I'm saying ego is not a bad thing. If you do not have spiritual ego, how can you say that I am a child of the divine and I have a divine birthright?
True.
There's a difference between forcing that big E and saying, I am the grand poopah of Coven XYZ and Druid Grove XWN, and you will listen to everything that I have to say, and you will not question anything because I am spirit. Okay? That is misplaced E. All right? But having that large E in the place of our higher self helps us acknowledge that we do have a right. And some of what the issue with allowing that magical persona to come through is because we do not feel worthy of it. We do not feel we have done the necessary work. We have not sacrificed enough. We have not done enough lessons with X, Y, and Z teacher. We have not been blessed by the visit of this, that, and the other. No. That's not correct at all. Go ahead.
I do have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm looking off of the paper. Would you consider the middle and emotional self to be like the combination of the lower physical self and mm-hmm. the higher mental knowingness?
Mm-hmm.
That's like the combination of the two
aspects. Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's heart and mind.
That's what I thought, but I'm like...
Yeah, it is. And I'm purposely not saying that because I don't want you to have come into this with preconceived notions. All right? It is the synthesis of heart and mind. That's exactly what it is. When we are dipping into the higher self, and you notice I said dipping into, not reaching up towards, but dipping into, because another thing is that all of these realms are concurrently occurring. There is no up and down whatever. They are continually moving in through all around us, if you, and this is a whole other class and we're not going to get into it, but if you really study anything about your energetic anatomy and how energy flows around you, it moves in a gyroscopic flow, it moves in a horizontal flow, it moves in all different manner of patterns. So when we're talking about all of these parts of cells,
right?
I'm sorry?
Like interconnectedness?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's all moving and morphing and changing and pulsing at the same time. The spiritual self is the divine spark. It is, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
One thing I think is really interesting is like how it says under the lower self, it says the conscious self, or is that like what you would be referred to sometimes as like talking self?
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
that's
it is.
In the lower self.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting for me to try to wrap my mind around
right.
the fact that this is
a little
something,
different, a different model.
Yeah, right,
something
right.
that is conscious thought,
right, right.
but it's in the lower cell,
right.
because it's maybe more concrete.
Yes, yes, it's much more concrete.
I used to deal with a Jungian.
Yeah, exactly.
Model.
Right, exactly. I remember I said in the very beginning there are various ways you can look at this. You know, shining self, the dove, fairy tradition, mm-hmm. Yekima, the Neshama, if you're in the Judea. I mean, they're all different ones. I chose these because it used semantics that were much more easy to, but that's good because this is where I want you to fill in the blanks for what these things, which is why I gave you so much here, to fill in so that you can make your own connections for it. With the divine self, the divine self is actually that aspect. You could think of it a couple different ways, all right? We have the lower, the middle, and the higher selves here. So when we are drawing up that magical persona, we are engaging all three of these selves, actively engaging in different quantities. You know, you measure out a little bit more flour if you're making one thing, a little less if you're making something else, all right? The divine self, or that divine spark, or that spiritual self, exists in all of these realms. Because we are the divine having a human experience, and we are humans that acknowledge and have awareness of our divine birthright. So the divine self actually encapsulates all of this. Even though it may seem as though this is the lofty self. And this goes back to what I said to Karen when she asked me about lifting the veil. That's exactly what I meant. The lifting the veil is actually being able to allow that divine self to shine through all of these other selves so that everything you are engaging in has that energy of the magical you, of the magical persona that you are, of what you show. And remember, if we go back to the definition, it's how you present yourself to or interact with, fill in the blank with what that with may be. It may be people, it may be the earth, it may be planetary energy, it may be the cosmos, fill in the blanks. It's all one and the same. The awakening of a persona takes form in all acts of devotion and magical workings, primarily because when we are preparing to do a magical act, a spiritual act, a devotional act, we already have turned the key and opened the door for that persona to enter. It's a little more difficult in the physical and mundane world because, just as I said to you, here today, it will be easy for you to think about these concepts. Maybe on Monday, when you go back to work, or you go back to school, or whatever it is that your test,
Tuesday. Labor Day.
Okay, Tuesday.
3-day weekend, woo!
Right. It may be a little more difficult to bring these concepts to the front, all right?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Are these concepts derived from any philosophers, like Freud, or...
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. There, I don't mean to be vague. There's a fair amount of Jungian in the work that I do. So, there's this is kind of colored a little bit by that.
Okay.
There's a fair amount of Kabbalistic work that I work with, which has the Judaic, the mystical Judaic in it as well.
You can see Freud though.
Right, yeah, and Freud as well.
You can see Huna.
Right, exactly.
Huna?
Who's that?
The Hawaiian.
Right, the fairy tradition, H-U-N-A.
Okay.
So there are a lot of different components that I'm presenting to you. There's no one stream. What I always say, which is why I tend to make my classes rather broad, because I try to really find some point of connection for everybody, something that each individual will come out of that class and say, oh, okay, that relates to what I know or what I think or what I want to explore.
Right.
So this is not any one specific tradition.
Okay.
This is a conglomerate of a variety of beliefs, and I don't really consider this to be a tradition thing, quite frankly, which some people may disagree with that, and that's fine. Meaning that I don't feel that it's something that is solely held by the Druid philosophies or the Wiccan philosophies or the Buddhist philosophies.
Okay.
You will find some form of a magical persona in any type of spiritual belief. Catholicism is one of the biggest ones. The actions that the priest does, which we're going to talk a little bit about, which we do they do based on what we do, did specific actions, particularly in ceremonial magic, the specific placing of the ring, the specific placing of the
wine
garment,
as opposed to the Eucharist.
Right, exactly.
What do you mean by a magical persona?
That part of you that is expressed in all of your workings that is more than what your physical being is.
Oh, okay.
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 Can you say that all of these things are, no matter how you practice, if you practice magic, knowledge of all of these things are required
to make it much more effective? Yes, at some point in time, you will make use of all of these concepts. Yes, absolutely.
Whether you have a proper name for them or not.
Whether you have a proper, and you know what, quite frankly, and thank you for bringing up that point, because quite frankly, we are spiritual beings. We don't have to have some identifier for what that spiritual aspect is. And a lot of times people intuitively do certain things and then learn later that, oh, okay, that's interesting. They do this for that, or this belief does that, and this is something that I've just kind of tapped into. And that is to a large degree also saying, and going back to what I'm saying to you, the magical persona is a consistent. How much of it comes forward at any given time is up to you. But it is always there. It is not just something that you put on or you step into when you go into sacred space or you do your spiritual work. It is always there. It is always with you. It is always a core fundamental of who and what you are in this lifetime and in this experience. So as far as the awakening of this particular persona, and I have something here, I'm not going to read it to you, that I had written. It's a poem about the robe slips easily over my shoulders. In some traditions, take that away. I didn't say that. Because this is something...
You can't take it back.
Oh, yes, I can. It's mine now. Because this is something that, quite frankly, anytime we engage in magical or spiritual work, we should be thinking about. Primarily because this is intention. This is the very first thing that opens us up to who we are as magical and spiritual people. The actions that we do prior to anything that we do that we consider to be sacred, all right? If you're going into ritual, the putting on of your robes, or just wearing something different than what you wear in mundane world.
Wear something with intention, perhaps.
Right. Sets your mind in a different space. It says automatically, I am going to be doing something different. This is really special, and because it's special, I need something special for it.
It's like a physical reminder that you're entering into a different
Right. And you need that physical reminder.
Yeah.
The wearing of specific jewelry or amulets, putting on the ring. In some practices, a specific ring is put on a specific finger because the fingers relate to specific things. Putting on a specific piece of jewelry that you do not wear necessarily in the mundane world. Or, as is the case with what I have here, I have had this for many, many years. It has been to every ritual, every workshop, a lot of different things. I wear it every day because I call on its energy when I need to draw something out and open myself, lift the veil, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It is a reminder to me of everything that is around me.
I can't tell you how often I've met people and had very significant relationships because I wore a pentacle out that day.
Right, right. Exactly.
Because I have a bumper sticker on my car.
Right. And it can be anything that you're wearing. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't go over. Okay.
Got like a minute.
Yeah, I know. We have a minute. Aww. All right. I'm so sorry, guys.
But your website's on there, right?
Yes, my website is on there. The rest of this work, all right? If you read nothing else, I want you to read this, The Butterfly Emerges. All right, so just take a little time today, if you can, to just sit quietly and read this. I kind of have programmed into it a little bit of a visualization that you'll automatically get, all right, by the way that I purposely wrote it. I hope this gives you just a little bit more of a taste of what the magical persona is and can be for you. My website is on here. You can contact me through there. I love to have questions. So if you have any more questions, I will probably be teaching this class elsewhere next year. I have a whole list of classes that I'm going to be teaching. This will more than likely be incorporated. Our classes are held not very far from here in the Springfield area. So please feel free to ask me anything. If you want to pull me aside later today and discuss anything, that's fine as well.
Is someone waiting to get in here?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful